Welcome back to The Drive on ESPN Blacksburg, AM 1430, FM 94.1. We've got Chris Coleman from TechSideline.com in studio. And Chris, as if the week couldn't get any worse after the ECU loss, now Kendall Fuller going down, out for the year with the torn meniscus, having surgery and everything like that. Just first regarding Fuller, should he have even been allowed to play this season?
You know, it's tough to say no to a guy like Kendall Fuller. And to the Fuller family,
right.
Whose family has meant so much to Virginia Tech, and you got to figure that even an All American, probably the best corner in the country, even at 75-80%, is probably going to be better than whoever you can put out there to replace him. So from that standpoint, I don't think it was necessarily wrong. I think maybe if they had been able to see into the future and know that he would only last three games, they probably would have done it differently. Because, you know, if they had gone ahead and done surgery in August, and, you know, they would have been able to figure out who their best boundary corner was against Furman and Purdue and Ohio State. And at that point, you're not still experimenting around with Greg Stroman against East Carolina, in which case you probably win the game, in all honesty. So there's different ways to look at it. I don't blame them for the way they handled it. But in hindsight, I wish it had been handled differently.
Absolutely.
Just for that one reason. But I don't think for them making that judgment at that moment in time, consulting the Fuller family that spent so much for Virginia Tech, I think if he wants to play on it, you got to let him.
So has Fuller played his last game in a Virginia Tech uniform? You think he leaves for the NFL after the surgery and after the season?
I think he probably does. You remember Kyle Fuller left after his, I guess it was after his junior year, wasn't it? He declared early, and he missed half of that season, I think, with a meniscus tear, wasn't it?
I don't know if it was meniscus.
It was something, yeah. Yeah. I think he'll probably still go. I think he could come back, but... You know, he's still going to be, even if he doesn't get drafted in the first round, he'll still be a second round pick.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And you know, if you're an NFL player, you're an NFL player, no matter what round you get drafted in. And I think if he came back for a year, then you just run the risk of getting hurt again and lowering your stock even more. So if you're in the first two rounds, I think you got to go, really.
And I don't think he really has much more to prove. I saw Todd McShay just released his top 32 NFL draft prospects. It was like right before the Fuller news broke, and he had him at like number 16 or something like that. So I don't really know what else Fuller really has to prove. I got something on Twitter. Somebody sent me, he's like, does some NFL scouting and things like that. And he said that he believes that Kyle Fuller was a better prospect than Kendall Fuller. What do you think about that? I mean, I've heard a lot of talk about Kendall Fuller being the better corner prospect for the NFL.
I think Kendall Fuller was better earlier in his career than Kyle was, just from a coverage standpoint. I think Kyle really took a step forward his last season in terms of coverage. He was a good cover man before then, but he turned into a great cover man in that last season, whereas Kendall came in and he was a great cover man from day one. I mean, just top-notch. I think maybe Kyle was had a little more linebacker skills to him than Kendall does, although Kendall's still good at that. I think you're kind of splitting hairs, though, when it comes down to it. But I think Kendall was the better cover man early in his career. From a pure cornerback coverage perspective, early in his career, he was better.
When looking at this secondary then now, how does it affect the secondary, and how does his loss affect the whole defense?
You got to figure out who you want to play at boundary corner.
Right.
And there's several different options there. It sounds like they're going to try Terrell Edmonds this week. They're not comfortable with Donovan Riley there. You know, they've tried him at free safety, Rover, Nickel. They've tried him pretty much everywhere in his career, and it seems like to me that the only place they're really comfortable with him is at field corner.
Is he a little bit big for that corner spot? He's like 210 pounds, I think.
I think if you put him at field corner and he can sit there in zone, then I think he's fine. You're right. He's not the most fluid guy with his hips and everything. And so I don't think he's an ideal boundary corner. He would have been a better option than Stroman last year simply because he's gotten more experience and, he's just a better player than Stroman at this point. And I'm not sure what Gray saw that thought made him think that Stroman was the best option. As far as Riley goes, though, he's one of those guys who can line up anywhere, but they really seem to think he's the best fit at that field corner spot. So he could get a shot there as along with Terrell Edmonds this coming weekend. Chuck Clark is always a possibility because he can play any position in the secondary, but then you'd have to find another free safety.
Yeah.
Which Darion Green could probably do, I think, at this stage. He played about 100, 150 snaps at free safety towards the end of the 2013 season, so he's got experience back there. Whether he'd be as good of a free hitter type as Chuck would against the run, probably not. Mm. But at the same time, Chuck's your best cover man. There are options, but there's not necessarily, you don't know what the best one is right now. I would probably try Donovan Riley over there just based on his experience level. I don't want to move Chuck Clark yet, but if Terrell Edmonds can't handle it and Donovan Riley proves that, yeah, he's a better field corner than anything else, then you might not have any choice but to try Chuck Clark over there.
Should Buck Foster have overridden the decision of Torian Gray saying, hey, we're going to go with Greg Stroman, even though that Terrell Edmonds has been practicing at that corner spot all week? I mean, it's just the whole comments and the whole dynamics of everything was really odd. And then we were at the press conference yesterday, and somebody asked about the whole Stroman thing, and Bud Foster was like, hey, Torian Gray's in the other room. You can ask him about it. And like, it wasn't like a throw him under the bus kind of a thing, but it just seems like it's just kind of odd, that dynamic that's going on.
Yeah, and the thing is, when you delegate to an assistant coach, you can't just jump in there and say, no, we're not doing that, as soon as he makes a decision on his own, because what's the point of even delegating at all? I think they probably should have stepped in quicker. I think after ECU's first two touchdown drive, it was pretty obvious that change needed to be made, but instead it didn't happen until halfway through the second or third quarter or something like that.
Sounds about right.
Yeah, so... I think, and who knows? Maybe it was Foster himself who decided to make the change, or maybe it was a mutual decision, or maybe Torian decided to change on his own. I don't know, but I think the decision, it should have been made quicker. I don't understand. I'm rarely shocked after a Tech game.
Right.
It's like 3 days after a Tech game at least. But I saw Stroman all in the spring, and I saw Stroman in fall practice. He was improved in August, as opposed to the spring, but man, he got cooked a lot in the spring. Like, whenever you saw Isaiah Ford making a big play, it was generally Greg Stroman 5 or 10 yards behind him. So I didn't think he was as good as Mook Reynolds in the spring. So it's always been odd to me. It was odd to me that they made that choice. And Mook played a really good game.
Yeah.
I actually want to see him at nickel now instead of Stroman. I think Mook played a fantastic game. Mook might have had the best game out of any of the defensive backs, in all honesty. So there are options there. It's just, you got a lot of guys who can play multiple spots, and that's a good thing, but you don't want to overthink yourself too much. And I think Torian just went with a gut decision right before the game. It turned out to be the wrong one. I would like to see Edmonds and Riley split the boundary corner reps, and I would actually like to see Mook take over that nickel role to see what he can do.
Do you think, this is kind of blunt, but do you think Greg Stroman will ever be a good player? Yeah. I know he came out, and again, we don't want to like go too far in depth in the recruiting rankings, but I just I see Greg Stroman on the field, I Google his name and type in Rivals or ESPN, and really low-rated recruit, didn't have a lot of offers, didn't seem to have a high ceiling from what I was reading, and he's not a very big guy. I mean, he's like 160, 65 pounds, and just what you think his ceiling is, or this is pretty much...
Well, he's
kind of a role player.
He's a good athlete, obviously. I mean, as he showed on punt returns last year when he gets going in the right direction, at least. He's not big, and he's not strong. I mean, you saw him that last touchdown where the guy caught it with one hand, and it looked like a push-off or whatever, but I don't really think it was that bad of a push-off. I just think it was just that guy was just so much bigger and stronger than Stroman than we just kind of leaned on him. He fell over.
Right.
And that jump ball down the sideline that Chuck Clark was just late getting over to, I mean, Stroman just kind of fell off that guy. So I just don't think he's strong enough to compete with these bigger receivers. He's got the athletic ability, but he's got to develop the football IQ, and he's got to get a little bit bigger. As far as his ceiling goes, he's a third of a way through his true sophomore year. We saw Donovan Riley get a lot better between his sophomore year and his junior year. So it's possible, but right now I don't count Stroman as a guy who is like a future starter. And I honestly don't think he should be starting now. I've always kind of wondered about that. I mean, Mook Reynolds was starting in the spring. over Greg Stroman, yeah. right? Mook Reynolds was starting at field corner in the spring with Brandon Faison out, and he outplayed Stroman clearly the other day and playing the nickel role. So I would like to see Mook get more time too, because I think he has a much higher ceiling. And from what I've seen in scrimmages, I thought he's outperformed him anyway.
Well, let's go from one happy and exciting conversation.
We can find one through here.
Yeah.
The referees obviously had a very difficult game.
Wasn't their best day.
Nope.
East Carolina played SEC this past weekend. What was that? I mean, there were so many times where it was smack your head against your hand or against the wall or like, put a beer glass.
You know,
it's crazy.
You know, when you're the official right under the goalpost, and that's the one who threw the flag on Chuck mm-hmm. Clark, right? Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes you think you see something, and it's a fast game, and maybe your depth perception isn't all that good.
It was
good.
Kind of a weird angle that he was going.
So sometimes they think they see something. Or they think they know what's going to happen, so they throw the flag, I think, and it was one of those situations where it was like that. But oh my gosh.
He didn't touch him.
He didn't touch him. I mean, that's one of the most ridiculous calls I've ever seen. You know, the Hillscamp call was probably the second worst call I've ever seen, because at least Hillscamp actually touched him. That's the only reason it's the second worst call ever. but yeah, that was not their best day.
No.
What do you make of that targeting rule that's going on in college football? I mean, especially with the Hillscamp thing, I think blows that out of proportion.
The problem with the targeting rule is it seems like it's still up to interpretation. Right. I don't know exactly what it is. It doesn't seem like players know exactly what it is. It doesn't seem like the reps or replay officials know exactly what it is. I mean, from my point of view, what the Cincinnati guy did to Gunnar Keel was targeting. Yeah. I mean, he was clearly sliding, and the guy just...
That was ugly.
Just took him out.
Really ugly.
Yeah. And Hillscamp, I don't even think Hillscamp's head made contact with their quarterback's head. Did it?
I mean, it didn't. And it's one of those things where... You know, you're trying to bring down an athletic quarterback, and you can't just stop.
Expecting he's going to go down. Right, exactly. I think some of these people who make these rules never even played football before. Sometimes people don't understand how fast this game is, and sometimes you can go in for a tackle not intending to go head-to-head, but the other guy might change his bearing right at the last second, and all of a sudden it's head-to-head, and there's nothing you can do about it. So I think it's one of those things. I do agree that it needed to be cleaned up to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. As far as hitting defenseless players and everything like that, but I do think it's gone too far to a certain extent. I think as a guy who played football in an era when the coach would come up and grab your face mask and smack you on the helmet, that stuff never bothered me. Mm-hmm. And everybody gets offended by it these days, and everybody's worried about players getting hurt. I'll tell you what they need to change. Look how much bigger players are these days, and it's not because they weren't lifting weights in the 80s and early 90s. It's because everybody's on supplements.
Yep.
Yeah.
There's a big problem with concussions, and you know, there's all these concussion rules in the NFL. Well, I partially blame the players. Get off freaking HGH and steroids, and get back to your normal, natural weight, and maybe you wouldn't be getting all these concussions.
Good luck in getting those out, though.
Exactly.
I mean, that's the problem.
That's the problem.
Nobody cares.
Right. Exactly. But it's not all the NFL's fault or anything like that. I mean, players have to take some responsibility from themselves in this thing, because, I mean, it's obvious. I mean, if you just look at the size of players, I mean, when I first started watching football, offensive linemen were 270 pounds. And even these days, you see them after they retire, after they quit playing in college, they're back down several years later to like 210 pounds or something like that. And they don't put on all that weight just by lifting.
Yeah.
Trust me.
But if you've got a guy next to you you're competing against who's 320.
And he's doing it.
What are you going to do?
Right.
You can do that or you lose your job.
Exactly. So, I mean, if you really want to put a stop to that stuff, then you've really got to start, you know, having a take-no-prisoners attitude. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We caught you, you're done. Yep. Never playing again.
Yep.
Laron Landry might be the poster child of guys who are just ballooning up and getting huge. A safety that looks that size. Chris, we talked about Sean Hulskamp, the targeting call and everything like that, and he's out for the first half of the game. And Andrew Mutuipuaka, they've got him practicing again. He was in the blue jersey. Do you think they're maybe trying to rush him back a little bit quicker than possible, just so they're not forced to start Carson Lydon? I know I'm kind of reading into it a little bit, but I just kind of get that impression that they may be trying to inch him back, even though he may be, you know, 75, 80%, whatever it may be.
I think think you might be onto something. There's no way you could ever prove that, and I'm not accusing them of that because I really don't know. But if I were in their shoes, I'm thinking, man, we're playing Pitt, and they just like to run the ball and run the ball and run the ball, and we'd have to play a true freshman linebacker who's played about 15 career defensive snaps. Let's come on back, Matuapuaka. But the scary thing is there, you know, if he re-injures it, then you've got to go to Leiden. Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, Leiden hadn't had that many reps. So I still feel like that, you know, you got to make sure Leiden's ready to play just in case, because it was an MCL sprain. From Matuapuaka?
Yes.
So they're going to say he's 100%. They always say everybody's 100%.
Right.
Yeah. I remember asking Torian Gray after the Ohio State game, saying, what's up with the wrap on Fuller's knee? And I had heard before then that he had a torn meniscus. Yeah. I had heard that. So I just wanted to see if I could get Torian Gray to say it. And he was like, oh, you know how it is. You know, everybody's just a little banged up at this time of year. And I'm like, okay, yeah.
Well, if you wanted real honesty, you probably could ask Foster about it, catch him off guard with
thing. And yeah, exactly.
You would have had something there. So I'm wondering if, you know, a 75% Matuapuaka is better than 100% Carson Leiden.
As far as getting everybody lined up and everything like that, probably. I did like what I saw from Carson Leiden the other day in limited time. Mm-hmm. I mean, he made that tackle for Lawson. When he hit that guy stopped. He did not fall forward.
The great part about watching him play is he does fly.
Yeah,
If he gets it wrong, it's really wrong.
Right.
And that's fine.
And you'd rather have to slow a guy down than speed him up, and you will never have to speed him up because he's full speed all the time.
Mm-hmm. We've got more with Chris Coleman from Tech Sideline. .com. You're listening to The Drive on ESPN Blacksburg, AM 1430, FM 94.1. Welcome back to The Drive on ESPN Blacksburg, AM 1430, FM 94.1. We've got Chris Coleman from TechSideline.com in studio. So, Chris, does your expectations for conference play, now the real season starts, according to, you know, Frank Beamer's comments and everything like that, with Fuller out, does that change your outlook on conference play or how you think they'll do? Or, I mean, I was looking up and down the schedule, and I see UNC's a team that's loaded with wide receivers. UVA's got a couple of good wide receivers. Miami, okay. Other than that, there's a lot of running football teams and teams that don't have a lot of, you know, weapons as far as wideouts are concerned.
Yeah, well, we didn't think East Carolina did either.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Navy certainly didn't think East Carolina did, right?
Nope.
But it does and it doesn't. I mean, I was expecting him to be out at some point this year anyway. I mean, somebody told us, two or three sources told us right around the beginning of the season. One of them told me a few days before the Ohio State game that they're just hoping he can play on it all year, but they're expecting it's going to give out at some point.
Yeah,
basically.
So there were a lot of people who heard that.
Yeah. And so I was expecting him to be lost at some point, but I still thought we'd still have a really good team because I thought, you know, our front seven would be terrific. I didn't foresee us having this trouble against the run. I mean, this is just shocking to me.
Yeah.
And you can talk. I mean, I knew we were going to have a question mark at Mike, but it's sitting all the Mike linebacker. In fact, at this point, it's the ends. It's all the linebackers. Mm-hmm. It's safety fits. I mean, it's kind of everything. You can point to just about anybody at this point. You know, on the whole, Kendall Fuller played fine. You know, not certainly not 100%, but and not as good as he's not as well as he's capable of playing. But he was solid. I thought when Tech did lose him, that they would replace him with somebody like, you know, Donovan Riley, or maybe they would slide Faison over to boundary corner and then start Riley at field corner or something like that. I never foresaw Greg Stroman in that role. I never saw him as a fit there at all.
Somebody did.
I was worried about him at nickel, much less boundary.
Wow.
So it does change my perspective because really it doesn't. My perspective started changing before I found out that he was going to be gone for the year when we just couldn't stop the run. And, you know, that doesn't have anything to do with him being out on Saturday with regards to stopping the run. We just, you know, didn't man up, didn't tackle, and everything like that. So I don't really know how to answer that question.
Yeah.
If our front seven and our run defense as a whole was playing as well as everybody thought it would play would play this year, then I don't think his loss would alter my expectations for the season. Now, the good thing is the offense has been a little better than I thought. I mean, if you told me, I looked at the S&P Plus advanced stats today,
right,
we're 16th in the country in passing efficiency. I mean, if you told me we're going to be that 16th in the country, 39th overall in offense after the first four games with a backup quarterback, I would have said, man, we're 3-1, maybe even 4-0 with those stats, because I would assume a top 10 defense. But unfortunately, I mean, while the offense is a little better than I thought they would be, the defense is a lot worse. We're right back where we were last year, really.
Not to backtrack you too much, but what did you think of Beamer's comments about the exhibition games?
You know, as a guy who's listened to Frank on the radio for the last 20 years, I'm not surprised by anything Frank says at this point. He's kind of you know, it's gotten worse now that social media and the internet.
Thing, you know,
I mean, I know where he's coming from. I mean, I don't think he should tell the media exactly what he told the team, because I think he's kind of tone deaf sometimes to how he sounds to the fan base, especially after a loss like that. I know where he's coming from. Yeah. I'm not mad at him about it. But if I was an emotional guy and I was driving home after that loss and I turned on the radio and I heard that and I was like, I just sat here for 4 hours in the rain for an exhibition game, bam, turn off the radio.
Yep, and will you be going back to that game Pittsburgh, it's going to be soaking.
It's even more wet than this past week.
By the way, have you heard anything about the idea of that game being moved in some way, shape, or form because of the horrific rain that's coming?
I haven't, but I would think it wouldn't be moved unless it was lightning. And if you think about it, the way the bye weeks are structured, Pitt had their bye week last week. For Virginia Tech's bye week isn't really a full bye week because of a Thursday night game. When would you play it?
The
ACC championship game, there's no built-in bye unless you don't play a Thursday night game or something, which I don't know if Pitt does this year or not, but we do, so we don't have a real bye. So you'd have to, what are you going to do, move the ACC championship back ACC championship game back to the 13th and then play the Tech Pitt game on the 6th? No, you can't do that. You got to play this game, and if you don't play it on Saturday, you got to play it on Sunday or Monday. It is what it is. But you couldn't play it on Monday because the Tech's next game is on a Friday.
That's right.
That's tough.
It's going to be really hard. I'm just thinking, I mean, there's nobody's going to that game.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's not going to be the densest crowd in Tech football history for sure. But you bring up a good point about that. And this is in general, not just about games being potentially canceled, but I think the season needs to be a week longer. Give everybody an extra bye week so everybody can get a real bye week at some point. Since Tech plays Thursday night games, we never get a real bye week. You know, not like everybody else does. So I think the season should start a week earlier, and then there should be an extra bye week built in just in case a situation pops up like this. But you save some wear and tear also.
Right. Exactly.
Finally, Chris, how do you think Virginia Tech matches up against this year's Pitt team? You did the Pitt preview.
I think they match up a little better than they did last year, honestly, and that's in hindsight looking back to last year. I mean, James Conner's not playing this year. And if you look at Pitt's running game, you got to look at what they did against Akron, 2.8 yards per carry, then 2 yards a carry against Iowa. But then again, East Carolina was only averaging 3.4 yards per carry before they played Virginia Tech. And then you worry about the boundary side defense because you're going to be starting a redshirt freshman at boundary corner and Terrell Edmonds, and you're going to be starting a true freshman at Rover and Adonis Alexander. You know, you got Tyler Boyd out there, one of the best wide receivers in the country. You can match him up on the boundary. You could line him up in the slot on the wide side of the field and try to get him isolated on Greg Stroman. So they've got some matchup possibilities there. I'm going to be really interested to see how Bud Foster schemes this game defensively. On the whole, I think it's a pretty even matchup, and it can go either way. I'm begrudgingly picking Virginia Tech just simply because Connor's out, and I don't think their running game is quite as good without him. But then again, Tech's rush defense isn't as good as it was last year. So you never know how that's going to go. And after all, Virginia Tech has lost 6 of their last 7 home games against Power 5 conference competition, with the only win coming against UVA, and that doesn't even count. Because they're a power conference team in name only, right?
Not after that last week. It certainly doesn't count.
Right. So basically, 0 for our last 6 against real Power 5 conference teams, right? So we're just not playing good football at home. So the last Power 5 team we beat besides UVA was Pitt in October of 2013. Right. I mean, that's a long time. I mean, people talk about it's good we're getting back home. I'm not so sure it's good we're getting back home.
Well, thanks for making me smile.
Yeah, no problem. I know we had a real sunny segment today. About as dreary as the weather outside.
Well, Chris, we appreciate it, and we'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good.
That was Chris Coleman from TechSideline.com. You're listening to The Drive on ESPN Blacksburg, AM 1430, FM 94.1.